Thank you, Ray, for inviting me to speak for the symposium. It's a nice opportunity. So today I'm going to present to you a Montana experience on crop eating monitoring impact of deficit water supplementation. So this presentation is a group effort among researchers like Paul Stoy, who is a biophysical scientist, and Kent McVeigh, who is here, who is a cropping system extension specialist, and two of Paul Stoy's graduate students. Since the beginning of 2014, when I started my job in Montana, it seems like drought has been every other year. So in 2015, in northwestern portion of Montana where the project was conducted, we experienced extreme drought. In 2017, which is this year, we experienced severe drought, while the rest of Montana is to the extreme and exceptional drought this year. Unfortunately, with drought, let me just talk about precipitation pattern. So in the y-axis, we have the precipitation in millimeters, and on average, with 18-year average, we usually have at least 220 centimeters, which is about at least 8 inches. In those years where we had drought, for instance, in 2015, that was only 69 millimeters total, which is just 2.7 inches. And then in 2017, increased a little bit, 142, which was only about 5 inches. Unfortunately, with drought like this, it's not only that you have a problem with water, but you also have a problem with extreme temperature. So it's also associated with high temperature. And as you can see here in the those red and brown line, it has always been above, the Tmax has always been above the average temperature, and for wheat, for instance, it usually do not like temperatures above 25 degrees Celsius, and only because it is highly thermosensitive at tillering to first of flower, which is usually, which that stage kind of mid-May to first week of July. So that will create an impact to wheat production. So our question then becomes, can water supplementation reduce the damaging effect of drought, which is typically, here I'm focusing on the high ambient temperature in wheat. The first objective is increase water use productivity of responsive wheat cultivars with deficit irrigation. And we integrate here characterization of ET with hard red spring wheat, and including barley and also canola, because they're one of the important crops for just for cropping systems in Montana. So first, let me introduce to you the project that I've done in 2014 and 15. So 14 again was the average year, and 15 was drought. This was conducted on a flathead fine sandy loam soil on a split plat design with 4 replications. So 6 irrigation were main plots, and then you have 8 cultivars of subplots. And we made sure that our target seeding was uniform at 222 per square meter. And also we used the surface drip irrigation to make sure that we account for every drop of water that we put on the main plot, and that the water is uniformly distributed across the main plot. So here, this is just an example of kind of a crude estimation of crop ET using soil water balance and KC approach. In 2015, the total crop ET here in this line is about close to 350, and it's about the same time, about the same amount in 2015, except that in 2015 it's a little bit compressed. The slope is a little bit higher, but the total is the same. And when you notice here in 2014, from emergence to physiological maturity, there's 95 days range. And in a drought year, this is usually reduced. So this was only 0 to 80. So it's reduced to at least 15 days. So that's why the water demand is a little bit compressed too. So the rest of the treatments are following. This is the 100% ET, the green line. We scheduled irrigation as soon as the soil water depletion out of the soil water balance was 35%. And then we simulated the all-season deficit, which is this black line over here. So, which is, we applied, in other words, we applied only two-thirds of the amount of the 100% ET that we applied, but we applied it at the same time, but it's just that we reduced the amount of water application. Another set of treatments where we simulated drought towards the back end. So for instance, we follow the principle of 100% ET, the timing, but we apply the final irrigation at medium milk, early milk, and flower. And that is what here the treatment is named for. So following in 2015 too. So go to the results. Overall in 2014, we really have a good yield potential in Northwest Montana. So this is a really good average year. Note that when I say rain-fed in this average year, this is not a representation of rain-fed in Montana because we are kind of highly specialized in that area in Kalispell where we receive more rainfall than average in Montana. So the yield here in 2014 is pretty much high, but notice that when you schedule your final irrigation at early milk, that's pretty much it. Any irrigation that you apply afterward is pretty much the same, even with the deficit, the 66 ET. And surprisingly, it's the same pattern in the 2015, that irrigation, the final irrigation at early milk is comparable to the rest of irrigation treatments. And with rainfed, that is very tiny there. But note that in here, this is not really a difference of yield because of water deficit. This is not, but this is actually just a difference of the ambient temperature, which resulted to the lower number of seeds per spike. Because usually when you have high ambient temperature during this thermosensitive stage of wheat, you would have more abortion of florets. So there's no irrigation and cultivar interaction. So statistically speaking, the choice of any cultivar is irrelevant. They said, okay, if they respond the same time, at the rate of response is the same for all cultivars, it's irrelevant, the choice of cultivar. However, when you look at the total yield for each of the cultivars, there is always one leading cultivar that yields higher on a good year and at the same time on the drought year. And the same as there's always lower in a 2014, which is Brennan, and also the lowest in 2015. So I look at water productivity slope using the upper plateau fit using a graph pad prism, providing an XO breakpoint because we have a priori knowledge already of what treatment was not responsive anymore. So when you look at both in 2014 and 2015 and you compare it with Brennan, I mean, technically speaking, visually even, it's Bolt is good, it's much more advantageous. But when you look at the slope, the water productivity function or yield per unit transpirable water, it's the same for everything. It's just that the intercept is different because this, you started off with a higher response at lower amount on that particular variety. It's much more problematic with an actual production system when you say I just want high yield, because it's not true. It's also complicated by the quality constraint. So we had a pretty much frustration when you try to just have a crude estimate of your ET, soil water balance, and you position your cardinal points of KC in different growth stages. And especially in Montana, that we have a very short life maturation of crop. So we borrowed an open ET covariant system with Paul Stoy and installed it on an irrigated spring wheat and barley, and Kent is doing the barley for us. And the following year, I acquired myself a closed path ET covariant and installed it in canola because canola is another important crop in Montana. So now this is the hard red spring wheat 80 flux that we gathered in 2016. And the first time I saw this, I got extremely happy and excited because my crude estimate for positioning the crop easy somewhat makes sense. And so I wasn't far off. So for instance, the beginning of the early vegetative stage, you have low ET requirement, and at four leaf stage, this is where tillering begins, and you would have, and then everything here starts to increase, and then over here you start, you know, having a high ET, which is pretty close to canopy closure, early heading where awns are visible, and then here at medium milk, then you have the ET started going down until physiological maturity. So this is our strategy before was not far off from this one. And the seasonal ET for this is about 350, about 14 inches, which is pretty much similar to what we've simulated in 2014 and 2015. So crop coefficient, our main objective really is to be able to provide our producers with a research-based crop coefficient that is pretty close to Montana condition. And so there, we are still having long ways of analyzing, make sure that these crop coefficients are not just source of error from evaporation and irrigation because it's under irrigated conditions. So we have to go back. But it all makes sense when your crop demand starts from low and then go, you know, you have a straight line on a slope like that, and then it goes down from medium milk to physiological maturity. The canola flux is a little bit, I'm surprised by this because I feel like why it started higher and then it's not recovering, you know, flower and full pod. But it makes sense that towards the pod starts yellowing, the ET is starting going down, and that is pretty close to actually where farmers want to swath them already, ready for harvest. So I look at my aerial photos of canola, I had a good recollection that early on in the stage when you just have four to five leaf, and then here's five to six, and then you have a rosette here where you started having a lot of leaf, and then here flowering, your leaf suddenly are now underneath, that its interception of radiation is getting poor underneath, and then here on the stem, and then starts flower starts aborting, and then here underneath, if you open it, the leaves are just all senesced and are underneath shadowed. So I grabbed this from Canola Council in Canada, and there's just a reverse of the photosynthetic contribution of these different plant parts, and it makes sense that, you know, when it's flowering and it has a lot of pods already, leaves are not exposed to radiation, such that most of the kind of the photosynthetic activity are not anymore attributed by the leaves. So going back here, it kind of makes sense. I thought maybe the photosynthetic contribution of the stem and the pods are not as efficient as when it was attributed by the leaves. But again, we still have a long way of evaluating, making sure these are not just contribution to evaporation and rainfall and irrigation events. So ET for canola is about 19 inches. Canola crop coefficient kind of looks like that. It's kind of odd, but we have long ways of evaluating what this means exactly, and is this really true? Do we have a lot more higher demand in the vegetative than in the reproductive stage? That's kind of the question. So have that as a question mark. Finally, what time do I have? I have 5 minutes, right? Okay, I have a lot of time. So finally, my recommendation here is irrigating after, apply your irrigation at medium milk. Although in my previous paper, if you apply irrigation at flower, it's about the same yield, but when you think about water holding capacity on a much lighter soil possibly, or if you cannot irrigate an inch and 25 or 30 millimeter of water, if your capacity is not very good, then you may have to extend it a little bit. So I used the next step, which is medium milk, as a recommendation, and doesn't increase anymore after that. And unfortunately, if you apply irrigation after that, you would have a lowered foaling number. Foaling number is a quality indicator that you will be penalized when you have low foaling number. And the foaling number is an indication of increased amylase activity, breaking down of starch into sugar. So what happened is this foaling number is, amylase activity is a very complicated thing. I don't want to go there. There's value of research when maybe investigating more why that foaling number decreases if you apply irrigation beyond that point. There's a study that was reporting on the exposure of heads on a high temperature during the day and low temperature at night, which is exactly what it is in Montana, that it could increase that amylase activity, and it's being triggered more by irrigating later. So you really don't have anything more but losses if you irrigate after that. So catching up with irrigation during drought then does not really alleviate the effect of drought to the lowered seed number per spike, the floret abortion, because of the high temperature, unfortunately, in wheat. Those screenings of cultivars with relatively higher productivity intercept is of interest. I mean, I'm not talking anymore of the slope because of the no irrigation and cultivar interaction. So now I'm talking about the intercept. Cultivar can have a better start than others. We still have more work to do in understanding canola ET, and maybe down the road we will have to do irrigation studies again that try to impose water stress at both ends to understand better, you know, how are these plants going to survive if you withhold a little bit of water. So again, everybody knows water is an important thing. There's not much going on around. So, and that's basically what the purpose of this presentation. Thank you. Yeah, you're talking about a classic interaction of plants to water availability, which is the roots are getting lazier, for instance, if that's the case. So at the beginning of the season, our approach was to, especially in the vegetative stage for the hard red spring wheat, we tried and do the 2 feet for now when we do our soil water balance. And then as we go along with that, when we already see a visible spike first on, we move it to 3 feet deep. So in irrigation, I think most of the irrigation that I know, you cannot go 4 deep, 4 feet as your, because I think most of the activity is within the 3 feet or 90 centimeters. Sorry, I'm talking about feet here. 90 centimeters. So I think you're right, and that's the reason why, you know, withholding a little bit is good, and I mentioned that in canola experiment that maybe we could do withholding water in the beginning and in the end and see how the plant will respond.
Any other questions? the field is the, when you put the eddy cover in.
It's a farmer's field. Yeah, because we needed the fetch, good amount of fetch to make sure it's a stable condition. So I think we're lucky enough to work with farmers that are very cooperative in the valley. And in your case, Kent, right? Yeah. So yeah.
How many acres is the field?
My field is 140 acres. How many is that in hectares?
That's big enough, right?
Sorry. 140 acres. It's a normal, it's average size for a center pivot. Yeah.
How does that deficit irrigation impact the quality?
You know, it's very surprising. I'm glad that you asked that, Susan, because I'm just talking about the falling number as a quality, because wheat is a little bit complex. There was a three-way association with so many things. And so I'm just going to do the falling number. So in terms of yield, the deficit irrigation did not really impact yield, but it still impacted the falling number. And it's not a matter of how much was being applied, but when it was applied. Because remember, in the deficit irrigation, I had the same scheduling event with my 100% ET. So it still lowered my falling number. So it was, especially for cultivars that are susceptible to lowered falling number. If you have a cultivar that's not, you're lucky, but others are susceptible. Oh yeah, sure. So remember, usually yield is highly correlated. You have a linear relationship with ET, right? And I usually think about that when I was in undergrad, thinking, well, I would just apply more, right? Because it's linear. But it's not really true. And that's the reason why there's an upper plateau fit that I put in there, because I think you started going curving and plateauing when you apply more that the plant is not necessarily needing. So if you just apply it when they need it, it's linear, but eventually when it's excessive enough for them, they don't respond anymore.
But those are two different things, right? Water applied and ET.
Sure.
Right? And so they're two different curves.
I agree with you. But when you provide... Let me just go back to the ET.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I will take a look at that. Thank you. Okay.